Hi everyone, my name is Doug and I'm a recovering addict. And, no, I said recovering because that's something I'm still doing. I'm still, as far as I'm concerned, the book's still open. Yeah, you know, there's all different kind of schools of thought on recovery, isn't there? You know, you've got the lot who say, well, you know, I'm recovered now and so forth. And, well, that's fine, you know, but with this addict, you know, I put the drugs down and I picked a lot of other things up as well, you know. So it's not just about drugs, is it? It's about a lot of other things as well. And, well, anyway, I'm clean today. And I'm clean thanks to NA. I got clean in NA. I didn't go to rehab or detox or anything like that. I actually walked in off the streets, and I don't know how I did that, to be quite honest with you. I knew I had enough, right? And people have been telling me for years that I had a drug problem, but of course, it's like I can handle it. I don't need to go with all you lot of losers, you know, and sit there and feel even more bad about myself. That's the way I perceived it, you know. And what happened, I've got to talk about my using, really. I mean, I've been around a good few years, and I tend not to talk about using so much now, because it's not about drugs today for me. It's about living in the moment, you know, and trying to be a productive member of society, I dare say, and, you know, keeping me nose clean, you know. And, yeah, I do that, and I do that with the help of this program. I started using many, many years ago when I was 13, and it's kind of weird actually, because I know this area very well, because at the age of 11 I was actually, I was a child actor, so I appeared in a lot of these theatres up here, and yeah, I've got some really good memories. Now, the thing is, a lot of the people I start along with in this production, in this play, they went on and they went on to, you know, do great successful things. Some of them actually went on to get Oscars, you know, they become Oscar winners, what have you. And sadly, that never happened to me. And it was like, that was, you see, I had this ambition that, you know, one day I'm going to end up in Hollywood, you know, and I'm going to be an actor. And it could have been possible, I suppose, you know, if I'd have been a bit more dedicated and drugs never got in the way. But sadly, it never happened. And when I left school at 15, I can remember going to the careers office, because in them days, you didn't have job centres. You went from, like, the classroom to the careers office. And, you know, you didn't have to worry about, well, you could stay on and do your A-levels, O-levels, and go on to college and uni if you want. But in them days, you could, like, just, like, leave school at 15 and walk into any job, you know, get an apprenticeship in whatever, you know. And by the time I was 15, sadly, the acting had finished. You know, I had, like, a four-year spell with it, you know, as a child actor. But, you know, when I got to 15, it was like I found myself going from, like, walking the boards on different, theatres up here, and working in, like, boring, old, mundane kind of jobs in factories, you know, working in factories, turning out nuts and bolts and that kind of thing, and thinking, fuck it, is this, you know, I should be on Hollywood, I shouldn't be doing this. And I got really kind of, like, disillusioned, you know, with life very early. You know, it's like one minute, you know, I was up there with the stars and everyone was, like, you know, praising me, and I was earning more money than my mum and dad combined, you know. And the next minute, you know, I was no longer this sweet kind of kid, you know, who's getting, like, calls from different, like, you know, auditions to, you know, appear in plays, to, you know, working in a bloody nut and bolt factory, you know. And, you know, no wonder I got resentful, you know. I'd be really pissed off with, like, churning out these, you know, whatever worthless bits of nuts and bolts, and I'd last about a week, you know. And, you know, I'd go from one job to the other, you know, and it's like, whatever job I did, you know, whether it'd be like, I don't know, I'd just be copying my mates. All my mates back then, they were, like, you know, working in building trade, there'd be like plumbers, bricklayers and painters, and I thought, oh yeah, that's a good idea, I'll do what they're doing, you know. And I'd have like 1 month there, you know, being a painter and decorator, and thinking, oh hang on, what am I doing here, you know, I should this isn't me, I shouldn't be doing this, you know. And you know, I kind of found relief in, well, getting off my face. You know, it's like someone offered me a bit of, you know, speed, and I was off, you know. And, you know, I loved it, you know. And it was like, if you was to say, you know, drugs are choice, I'd use anything you put down in front of me. I wasn't particularly bothered what you put in front of me. I'd use anything at all that, you know, got me off my face. And I stayed like that for, you know, many years. And, you know, the thing is, I kind of went from one rock bottom to another. You know, by the time I was 15, I can really pinpoint 15 as being like the year, the time when I actually, yeah, when addiction kicked off for me, because I, you know, things started to kind of happen in my life. Like, for one, I couldn't stop taking dope. You know, I love dope, you know, and I'd do anything to get my hands on dope. And the sad thing is, looking back, you know, even at 15, you know, I kind of spent a great deal of my time, you know, kind of, you know, with my mates getting off my face, but also I'd be at home on my own, you know, in a dark room smoking dope, you know, just trying to, like, you know, block out the world, because me and the reality, we didn't get on too well, you know, at all. It was like, I was pretty good at creating my own reality, and, you know, I'm quite creative, and I play music, and I like reading books and that kind of stuff, and, you know, and that's what creative people do. You know, they spend a lot of time on their own, you know, getting off their heads and dreaming up their next adventure, you know, and it stayed like that for many years. And what happened, I found myself, like, hanging out with other guys. I'd look up to guys like who'd be using Class A drugs, you know, and you know, I'd start using whatever they were using, you know. Before I knew where I was, I was like shooting up Class A's, and, you know, come 1978, I was living in squats and things like that, and within like 6 months of getting a habit, I was doing a 3-year jail sentence, you know. So, you know, it went from this, like, kind of bright hope, you know, this bright kid, you know, with all these, like, kind of ambitions and aspirations of becoming an actor, to sitting in a cell, you know, with, you know, these hardened prisoners, you know. It was like, you know, even there, I didn't feel like I fitted in, because these kids, you know, these guys I'd be doing this bird with, they've all been, like, in and out of, like, you know, ball stall and, but, you know, all different kind of, like, places, you know, by the time they were like 21, and it was like, oh, what are you doing in here, you know? And it's like, oh, I got done, you know, for drugs, I'm doing, you know. And it's like, you know, I feel totally at odds with the world. It was like, you know, even in prison, you know, I felt, can you believe it? I didn't feel like enough, you know. I didn't feel worthy enough to be in a cell with someone who was doing 5 years, you know, and I was doing 3 years, you know. Maybe if I'd like gone down the same route as him, you know, like done a bit of a ball stool, I might feel like, you know, part of, you know, crazy. But anyway, one good thing about that, you know, they say prison, you know, it kind of, well, it either makes you or breaks you, doesn't it? And it certainly with me, it made me, because I swore that I would never go back again. And I did, I learned a lesson, you know. That was in 1979, I got out in 1981, okay, I'd done 2 years out of that. And I came out and I got the inevitable, you know, see you later, son, from the screw on the gate. And I said, no, you won't. And they didn't, you know. So I learned a lesson. I wasn't this, like, kind of ardent kind of crook, you know. I was more like a opportunist, desperate addict, if you want, you know. And when I think about it, you know, I got 3 years for a burglary, you know. It went sadly wrong, you know. It went really wrong, and everything was traced back to me, and I got, you know, I was banged to rights, really. So, yeah, it was like a lesson learned. But the thing is, when I came out, I don't think I really am a drug addict, you know. I don't think I really am a drug addict, because, you know, I spent a lot of time inside, and drugs wasn't nowhere near as prevalent as what they are now inside, you know. It was more like a dope thing, you know, in the 70s and what have you. And it only kind of got worse in the 90s. But the thing is, when I think about it, you know, when I was there, you know, my whole mind, body and spirit was thinking about dope still. You know, how can I score? And looking, you know, looking for like ways and means to score in the exercise yard and finding out who's been on a visit and who's copped a packet and that kind of thing. And, anyway, I kind of came out and I thought, well, I don't think I am an addict. And I went through this kind of phase of like, using every other day, or just using at weekends, or just using when the gyro come. You know what I mean? I become like a gyro junkie. And, the sad reality is, the last 10 years of my using, it was like where I lived out in a little kind of leafy suburb in Hertfordshire, and it was like everybody knew me. It was like such a tiny little town. It was a population of about 16,000, and everybody knows each other's business, you know. And it's like, what dealers were there? You know, I'd go round their house to score, and they wouldn't let me in. You know, they wouldn't let me in. It was like, such was my reputation, you know. So I had to find other ways to score. So I came up here. I ended up becoming a dilly junkie. I don't know. Well, you know, it was like a bit of a scene back then, you know. It was like, you had prescription drugs available, you had pharmaceutical drugs available, you had private, doctors up in Harley Street giving out scripts and, you know, to addicts, and the place would be rife with drugs, you know. It was like Shaftesbury Avenue was like, it was like pharmaceutical street, you know. Every shop doorway was like full of addicts and, you know, people scoring. And what I used to do, I used to come up here and score and go back to where I used to live. And then I'd look at the addicts on the street and think, look at them poor sods, you know, they're the addicts, you know, at least I'm coming back to my house, or I've got a roof over my head, you know. All this kind of like denial going on and pointing the finger at other people, you know, and that's a way of protecting myself. I did that because it was like, there was always someone worse off than me, you know, it kept me from looking at myself, you know. And it kind of carried on for a good few years. It carried on, let me see, up until about, you know, in and out of rock bottoms and of some sort. And what happened, I was on a methadone script, and the counsellor I was getting the methadone off told me about NA. This was about 1985. And he told me about a meeting, a front light, very much like this actually, not quite as big as this, and not the same kind of setup, but it was in Rathbone Place, and it was in a probation hostel. And he told me about this meeting. He said, if you go along there, I'll give you as much methadone as you want, but, you know, you've got to promise me you'll go to this meeting and give it a go. And I was in a relationship then, believe it or not. I actually found a woman who, you know, could put up with me. And we were like, she was an addict, of course. You know, we took each other hostage. And she had this fantastic job. She had a great job working in Soho. I know what you're thinking, it wasn't that, she was actually working for like a publisher. She was working for like soft porn magazine guy, and she was like the editor of the magazine, and she had a great wage, you know, and it was like she was keeping both of our habits going. And what happened, we both ended up going to this NA meeting, and it was like, I was going for her and she was going for me, you know. We weren't going for each other, and I was going to keep someone else happy, who was at that counsellor who promised me all that methadone. So I wasn't ready to give up. But what happened, a seed was sown, because I saw other addicts in there who, you know, said they were clean, and I believed them. I believed them because I knew some of them from the dilly, and there was a few up there I knew from, they were like going up the dilly since the 1960s, you know. So like, they were like real, you know, hardcore, hardened addicts, you know, in every sense of the word, you know. And I saw them sat there in this meeting, and they were like 2 or 3 years clean. And, they welcomed me, you know. And they said, look, you know, keep coming back, and, you know, make me feel welcome, gave me a bit of literature and things like that. And I tried, you know, I tried, like, getting clean, but I couldn't, you know. I'd turn up and, I'd be off my face, you know, and I'd go at the end of the meeting, I'd be back on the deli scene again, or where my girlfriend was working in Soho and looking to score around there. But what happened, within a year, I hit a rock bottom of rock bottoms. And how that rock bottom came about was both of us decided to go to India, to Goa, on this package tour. You know, we thought it'd be a good idea if we had a couple weeks out in Goa, and maybe we could get clean out there, kind of thing. Yeah, mad, isn't it? And we went to Goa, and came back with even bigger habits, and it was crazy, it was no matter what I used, it just wasn't enough, isn't that the way, it doesn't matter what you give us, it's never enough. And it was but what happened, she dumped me, she gave me the elbow for her boss, and her boss was this guy, real a jet set kid, had his own bloody Triumph TR4, classic car, nice car in the country, nice house in the country, and a townhouse in Holborn, two houses, God knows how much he was earning. And I remember thinking, I remember saying to her, what's he got, what I haven't got? Such was my denial, really. It was I thought I was, one and only, and, my fantasy was, it's like one day we'll end up tying the knot and end up walking down the aisle, together. But it never came about. But I tell you, it was such a rock bottom, because it really, really done it's terrible. It was winter time, and I was staying around my mum's house at the time, and I come from quite a large family. I'm the fifth of six kids, and all my brothers and sisters before me, they've all married, got jobs, got responsible jobs, and settled down, and I was this 32-year-old, 15-year-old, kid, still, tied very much to his mum's apron strings. And what happened, I just lost it. I lost the plot completely, and it was she kicked me out, and so I was homeless. And so I was homeless, jobless, and almost drugless, because I couldn't score for the for anything. I was trying to get clean. I was trying to do it my way. I'm terribly self-willed, I think my self-will actually got me clean, actually, because what I did, I thought, for as long as I don't use a gear, and I had a huge habit, I just come back from Goa, and I was I had a huge habit, and it was I stopped, funny enough, on my own, but, I'd be smoking shitloads of dope, and drinking port, because I acquired a port habit out there in Goa, because Goa's being Goa, they've got lots of port, and everywhere you went there was port, and it reminded me of methadone, actually, and it was keeping me, keeping me from being sick. So, I acquired this port habit, and I thought, as long as I don't have a hit, and I just have a smoke, I'm fine, And, what I did, I had one friend left who put me up in his flat, and he gave me this space on his floor, and I was in this piss-stained sleeping bag in his living room floor, and I remember I said to him, I can't do this anymore, I've had enough, and I told him that I'm going to go back to NA and give it a go again, and he said, yeah, I've heard it all before, but what happened, within 2 weeks of saying that, I actually, I got back to NA again, and that was in January the 15th, 1989, and I've been clean ever since. So I made a vow to go back, and I was crazy, I'd be in the meetings, I'd be hallucinating, and I was totally off the wall. But what I did, I found them mates, old mates of mine from the Diddy, who supported me, and they gave me the program. And what worked for me was the power of example. That's what got me clean, there's no doubt about that, because, having seen these guys, and, these guys were all, hardened, tough addicts, and I saw a side to them which, you know, totally blew me away. I saw one particular guy who, you know, he was an ex-boxer. He had, like, hands like shovels, you know. I saw him once in a meeting, you know, bawling his eyes out, getting really vulnerable, sharing about, you know, his brother who died of addiction, who threw himself under a train in Dagenham. And it totally blew me away, you know, this guy, you know, hardened addict, you know, showing that level of vulnerability and getting honest like that. And, you know, I learned a lesson that if I wanted to get clean, I'm going to have to show the same kind of level of honesty as that, you know. And I did, you know, I made this kind of pledge, if you want, to, you know, be as honest and open-minded and as willing as I can, you know, and I stuck to that. And I found what got me clean was getting involved in service, you know, what we call the four S's. I don't know if you can still call them the four S's, you know, steps, sponsor, service, and sharing. Simple. Them four S's. If you've got all them in place, don't matter in what order, you know, if you stay true to those four S's, you're in with a chance. And, you know, I've always done service, always. And, you know, I love it. You know, I either take meetings or, you know, I've been a treasurer or I've been involved in public information, H&I, and, you know, I've never swayed too far away from service. And, you know, I love doing it. You know, even today I do the helpline, you know, and that, you know, that can be quite, yeah, you know, you've got to have an open mind to do that, believe me. It's can be quite challenging sometimes because you get all different kind of calls on there. And, you know, and I love it, you know. And it reminds me, of course, it reminds me of why I need to still keep coming back here. And, yeah, how much more time have I got left?
15 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to talk about current stuff. It's very important. You know, you've heard about my using, so I'm going to talk about what happens today, my life today. I've got a great life. Life still goes on. Life still keeps throwing shit at me, you know. You know, right now it's been quite uncomfortable. My oldest, I got married in recovery. I've been married for 25 years. I don't know what's more like miraculous, being clean for 30 or, you know, being married for 25 years. But, you know, I'm clean for 25 years, and it's like, I guess that says something about me and commitment, you know, and my relationships, you know. And, you know, I don't know how to do relationships. You know, I've struggled, you know, I've gone to marriage. I can't, if I've got a problem with my wife, I'm not going to come here and share about it with you lot. I'm going to have to go to a counsellor or a therapist or a marriage guidance, you know. If I've got a problem with drugs, I come to you lot, you know what I mean? If I've got a toothache, I'm not going to come to you lot. I'm going to go to the dentist, you know. So I've got to find out where to take my stuff. And, you know, for me, it's about kind of finding where I feel comfortable and, you know, having boundaries around stuff. And, you know, I came in boundless. I had absolutely no boundaries whatsoever. And I had no clue on how to be a father to my kids because there's no book, is there? Not as far as I know. Does anyone know of a book on how to be a good parent? I don't know. So, you know, I struggled with that, you know, being a parent. And the only kind of experience I got is what was taught from my parents. And actually, you know, I love my parents are no longer with us, but, you know, I love my parents, but they failed miserably on bringing up kids, you know. And it wasn't their fault, you know, they were like, you know, I'm a baby boomer, you know. Both my parents went through the war, you know. They were traumatised after the war, you know. It was like, you know, I think my mum met my dad when she was 19 and he was 22. And I think they married within a week of meeting each other on the steps of the cinema in Edmonton, you know, a week within married. Anyway, and they had six kids, to which I'm the fifth of six. And, you know, I'm a parent today, and, you know, I've got two beautiful girls, and, you know, they're great. And, you know, I don't know if they're addicts, I really don't know, but I tell you what, they've never seen me off my face. Never. And all they see their dad is, you know, reading, going to uni. I go to uni. I'm a late kind of, you know, learner, if you want. So they see their dad going to uni. They see their dad reading books. They see their dad, like, playing guitar. And they see him getting up and going to work, you know. when I looked at my parents in the 50s and 60s when I was growing up, they were like just like arguing and kicking the shit out of each other, you know. My dad wasn't, you know, there was no drugs in the house, but there was certainly drink. And my dad was in the Navy, you know, so he liked to top, you know, tipple with like a rum, you know, but as far as I know, he wasn't an alky or anything. And I've got other brothers and sisters as well, and they didn't go down the same road as what I did. And, you know, I don't really want to look at their stuff, to be honest with you, because it's not about them, it's about me, you know. So I really don't know, it's not for me to say whether they're addicts or not. But, you know, both my kids, you know, they're really, they're bright, mature, emotionally mature kids, you know. But the last 6 months has been quite a struggle because my eldest daughter, she was diagnosed with an illness, MS, which is, if anyone knows what MS is, it's a disease that paralyzes certain parts of your body. And, you know, it's been quite difficult to be with that. We don't know how bad it's going to be because she's only 6 months into it. But, you know, she's been great. She's taken responsibility for it. She's and she seems to be getting over it. I mean, is it something you get over? I don't know, you know. But anyway, she's got a great deal of acceptance around it. And, you know, she's getting on with it. And we're supporting her through that. And, you know, we went, luckily for her, she's got a good job in the city, working for this bank in the city and finance and all that stuff. And they've paid for her to have like private healthcare, health insurance. So, you know, she's been getting really good healthcare. So hopefully, you know, things are looking pretty good. But anyway, what she's done, she's changed her diet. She's gone from like this junk food kind of like McDonald's kind of, you know, habit, if you want, to this like kind of vegan, you know, who's eating like dairy-free produce. She's got. And she's a picture of health, she really is. And what we've done as a family to support her through that is change our diets as well, you know. So, you know, it's like one for one, you know, three, you know, what's it, the Musketeers saying, you know, one for one, three for all. So we're like, we're all in it together, supporting her, you know. So like, I've gone from eating like, you know, lamb chops to eating like vegan kind of, you know, salads and what have you. But I have a sneaky little cheeky little Hernando's from time to time. But they don't know about that, you know, they don't know about that. But, you know, I'm okay with that. I'm okay, but inside the house, you know, we really healthy, you know, and we're like a picture of health, you know, when you come into the house and look at the larder, you know, it's great. Life still goes on, you know, there's no guarantees, there really isn't, but what this program's given me, it's given me the steps, and I found through working the steps, it helps me to live in the here and now, and I can separate my shit from your shit, you know. And get on with my life, you know. And that's certainly one thing I've been given today, a life. And I've been given a life far beyond my wildest dreams. I can remember my second sponsor saying, look, if you stick around these meetings, you're gonna get a life beyond your wildest dreams. And it was like, yeah, sure, you know. But he was right, you know. I never thought that, you know, I never envisioned that one day I'd be married, you know, to a beautiful woman, and have two kids. That was all you lot. You get that. And it happens to friends and families and relatives. I didn't think I'd find that. But lo and behold, you know, I found that when I was like 5 years clean, you know. And it's been great, you know, because my missus, she comes from Brazil. She's a South American. So, like, we've got a nice little place over in Brazil we go back to from time to time when we can, when we can afford it. And I've taken on board another culture as well. You know, I'm very much into like South American culture, and I kind of half taught myself Portuguese at Hugo, and it's been great. You know, I can speak some Portuguese. You know, and I was kind of blown away by that because I never thought I could take on board another language or learn anything like that, because I kind of came from this place where, you know, you're never really encouraged to, like, do well, you know. It was fiercely competitive, you know, and at school, you know, it was, like, just about putting your head down and doing the kind of, like, three R's, you know, and, you know, leaving school and getting an apprenticeship. But you know, looking back, I had quite an extraordinary life, actually, when I think about it. You know, I guess we've all got this extraordinary life, you know, going on and stuff. But I did. I had this quite extraordinary life when I think about it, you know. I went from this, like, kind of child actor, you know, rubbing shoulders with all these famous, like, actors, to this, like, kind of, I don't know, this, like, fouled, like, kind of addicts in a prison cell, and, you know, and later on, you know, turning up at an NA meeting, think, well, is this it? You know, my life's over. But little did I know that actually life was just beginning, yeah? So, and that's been my journey. I know I've got 5 minutes left, but I think that was a really nice, happy note to end on, wasn't it? What I just shared there. So I'm going to leave it there, eh?